Hi, and welcome to Labor Radio Podcast Weekly. This is Chris Barlock with this week's selection of highlights from the Labor Radio Podcast Network. Nearly 70 labor radio and podcast shows that focus on working people's issues and concerns. This week, we welcome back Radio Labor, which produces great daily labor news updates. Today's show also includes Union Yes Iowa, which just joined the network, and a teaser for the brand new Working to Live in Southwest Washington, which just launched on Labor Day. On the IAFF podcast, Atlanta firefighters talk about how this summer's street protests have affected them. And on my own show, Union City Radio, we hosted a Labor Day roundtable discussion with a half dozen labor radio and podcast hosts from around the country. We wrap up today with an excerpt from the latest episode of the San Francisco Mime Troupe's Tales of Resistance. That's all ahead on this week's edition of the Labor Radio Podcast Weekly, bringing you Working People's Voices. Here's the show.
This is Solidarity News on Radio Labor.
This is a Radio Labor report recorded on Wednesday, September 9th, 2020. I'm Mark Boulanger. In the United States, the coronavirus has infected over 6 million people. More than 186,000 have died. The real unemployment rate is about 20%, almost as high as during the Great Depression. Most affected are racialized workers of color and women. To highlight the problems being faced by workers in the U.S., the AFL-CIO National Labor Federation recently held a webinar to discuss the issues.
I'm Tafari Gabre. I'm the Executive Vice President of the AFL-CIO. I am honored today to be on this panel with our Secretary Treasurer, Lou Schuller. Brothers and sisters, the coronavirus has been devastating us for over 6 months in so many ways. And while it has affected all working people in this country, it has especially affected African Americans, Latinos, Asian Americans, and Native Americans. They have been infected in disproportionately high rates. Working people are of color, migrants, and women who have been the front lines since day one are bearing the unjust burden. Workers of color are not only losing their lives at shockingly high rates, their livelihoods are also threatened. This crisis has accentuated the growing inequality, with whites nearly 50% more likely to be able to work from home than that of Latinos, and 35% higher than that of African Americans. This kind of disparity cannot exist in our country, in our workplaces. It's not okay for workers of color to be more likely to be paid poverty level wages as compared to white workers. It's not okay that this pandemic is worsening deep divisions in our country. How can we as a country celebrate the rising stock market as more than 12% of adults say they don't even have enough food to eat on a regular basis? These numbers are disheartening. And it's one of the reasons we're all fighting so hard in the labor movement. Now, it's my honor to turn it over to my sister, Elizabeth Schuller, Secretary Treasurer of the AFL-CIO.
Thank you so much, Tafari. Millions of people are out of work right now through no fault of their own. They did their jobs. They did everything right. But now so many working people are needlessly suffering. And we see it on the news, and with the numbers so high, most of us know people who are making chilling decisions between paying for medicine and keeping the lights on, facing the uncertainty and the stress of how to put food on the table for their families. And as you well know, by every measure of this virus, as Tafari just said, from illness to death, to unemployment, to healthcare, to housing, Black and Latinos are the most impacted and have been hit the hardest. And we can be honest, I mean, this is nothing new, right? Inequalities in our economy, in our health systems, in our communities housing have always affected people of color the most, and it predates the pandemic. But the coronavirus is actually just making it easier for us to see the longstanding impacts of systemic racism and inequality. This crisis is also being called a she session. Why is that? Well, because women are losing our jobs at much higher rates than men in every single sector. And African-American women and Latinas are being hurt the most. Again, they're bearing the brunt of this she session far more than white women. Working people across the country are exhausted, but their grit and their resolve is truly incredible.
And that's it, International Labor News You Can Use. You can find our features and daily newscasts on our website at radiolabor.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Labor. I'm Mark Boulanger. Thank you for listening. And remember, it's all about global solidarity.
Our podcast is Union Yes Iowa. Today, we want to talk about Labor Day and the historical perspective of it. And we have Peter Rashliff from the Eastside Freedom Library, previously with McAllister College, and John McCurley, who is our ILHOP, and wears many other hats here in Iowa for us with labor history. We have to know where we came from, and our history tells us that, depending on who's telling the histories, that's one of the issues. But why is Labor Day important to the working class?
I think that, like everything that we're experiencing now, life is full of contradictions. And Labor Day is a holiday full of contradictions. In its origins, Labor Day was established by President Grover Cleveland in July of 1894, a week before he sent federal troops to put down the Pullman strike and the strike of supporting railroad workers and neighbors in Chicago and Pullman, which was a suburb of Chicago. So on the one hand, finally, a holiday that recognized labor, and on the other hand, at the very same time, sending troops to put down a strike. Created in a period of the 1880s and 1890s, probably, you know, of the greatest labor conflict, certainly of the 19th century, and hard to measure against perhaps the later 1930s. In 1886, workers had begun a strike in Chicago for the eight-hour day that spread throughout the United States. And in the aftermath of that strike and the repression and violence in Chicago, what became called the Haymarket Square Riot, workers and the labor movement in the United States and workers in the labor movement around the world decreed that May 1st should be Labor Day. And so what workers were often doing between 1886 and 1894 was celebrating May 1st as Labor Day. And that was a holiday that Grover Cleveland, who was a Democrat, and the Democrats in the Senate and Congress, who were so-called friends of labor, wanted to have a more acceptable, calmer, not so radical holiday. And so they picked up on what some of the building trades unions had been proposing of a holiday in September. So another contradiction. Should Labor Day be May 1st or should Labor Day be in September? So all these contradictions around it. And I think that those of us who have been around for a while know that you have to go into the contradictions, not run away from them. And you have to try to push them in a direction that's positive. So one of the contradictions that we're living in the midst of right now is this adjective essential, that there are essential workers. nurses, personal care assistants, other hospital workers, meatpacking workers, grocery store workers, Amazon workers. And so workers who were once invisible are now being called essential. But when they're called essential, does that mean that they get guaranteed safe working conditions? Seemingly not. Does it mean they get guaranteed higher pay? Seemingly not. So there are workers, I think transit workers in New York, who came out and said, we feel more like we're sacrificial than essential. They're asking us to die. I think of our friend Ann Feeney's great song about Workers' Memorial Day. We just came here to work. We didn't come here to die. So the contradictions around being essential, the contradictions around Labor Day, that we have to be willing to engage contradictions if we're going to promote social change. And I think, ironically, Labor Day is not simply then a day to celebrate labor. Labor Day is a day to generate critical thinking about the contradictions within which we're living. So I've been going on long enough. John, what do you say?
Fundamentally, the experience of being a working class person, there's a fundamental collective aspect to that. People living their lives in community, people living their lives in relationship to one another in the workplace, and coming together and reminding ourselves what those collective values are and celebrating those collective values, that's important. And at its best, that's what Labor Day allows us to do. You know, it gives us moments that we have reserved for ourselves through the year where we come together to celebrate those collective values that are so important to us and so important to building the collective strength that we know we need, that the labor movement teaches us that we need in order to confront the kind of challenges that we face right now. Workers are, as they so often are the hardest hit in these moments of crisis and epidemic disease. I've been trying to work through this relationship between workplace disease and epidemic disease. What seems to keep coming back to me, our society and other societies, we want to segregate workers, hide them away, have them do the kinds of work that we believe needs to be done, but we don't necessarily want to see the consequences of the working conditions that are foisted upon these workers. So like, for example, in meatpacking, since at the very least the 1980s, that's a job that has always been dirty and dangerous, but meatpacking workers came together at the very least in the middle of the 20th century, and they fought to make that work somewhat more humane. And they faced vicious response from their employers increasingly during the 1980s and in ways that shattered much of the collective strength that they had been able to build. And they're still trying to rebuild that strength, but they're doing it in many ways in the shadows, where we've put them off into these invisible places that don't get a lot of light, except in moments like this. And it's incumbent upon us to try to bring as much light as we possibly can into these circumstances to say, you know, yes, there's a sort of specific tragedy to this moment, but it's not a singular tragedy that is only brought about because of the epidemic disease. But in fact, it's part of a much longer history of systemic oppression of workers in these workplaces.
I appreciate what both of you do. I'm proud to call you my brothers and friends, and look forward to the day that we can shake hands and sit across the table and not have to wear a mask and not do a Zoom meeting. I'm definitely getting Zoom fatigue, but you know, someday that will happen. So, but thank you both very much.
Thank you, Lance. It's great to see you, and thank you for bringing us together.
Hey, Chris Garlock here with a Union City Radio podcast extra. On Monday, our annual Workers Rising Labor Day show aired on WPFW 89.3 FM. Today's podcast extra features the roundtable with labor radio and podcast hosts from across the country as they talked about their shows, the growing Labor Radio Podcast Network, and the importance of worker media outlets.
None of us are free. None of us are free. None of us are free if one of us is chained. None of us are free. It's the very heart of humanity.
For this next hour, it's a thing called the Labor Radio Podcast Network, and I started putting it together a couple of years ago. So we just started building this out, and then right after the pandemic hit, had a little extra time on my hands and discovered this new Zoom tool. And so we started having weekly meetings, and tell us, Harold, are we up to 70 yet? Because I know we're getting close.
We are getting close, Chris. I believe with a couple of new shows that you just came across in the past couple of days, we will be up to 68. So we're getting close to 70, not quite.
That's Harold Phillips. He's become our social media guru on the network. He is an actor, but as you can imagine, all actors have to have side gigs, and he does a lot of stuff with web and social media. And Harold just launched his own podcast, Working to Live in Southwest Washington, which is the other Washington. Also with us, Judy and Sal from the Heartland Labor Forum radio show, Bama Athria from the Gig Podcast, Liz Medina from En Masse, Jacob Morrison from the Valley Labor Report radio show. Thank you all so much for being with us, especially early on this holiday. Welcome, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Happy Labor Day.
Let me start with Bama. So what is the Gig Podcast?
Well, I've worked on international labor rights for a long time. I cut my teeth as an anti-sweatshop activist back in the 1990s. So it's not new for me to be, you know, interviewing working people. But lately, with all this fuss in the U.S. about the quote-unquote sharing economy and this gig economy and what is it, and I was looking at what, you know, kind of was being sold to people as being this fabulous, shiny new gig economy, and it was kind of the same thing that people have been doing in all these other countries like Bangladesh and Guatemala and other places like that where I've been interviewing workers for a long time. It's really just like you hustle to get whatever gigs you can to make it by, right? That is it. So I started this podcast because it was just a new way to tell those stories, right? To not just be writing about it, you know, like who reads stuff anymore, but to get those voices on air so people could hear just how similar those stories were for somebody who's like driving rideshare in California and somebody who's driving rideshare in India. So that's what it's really about, getting those stories out there.
Yeah, and one of the things I love about your podcast is they're not voices that you normally hear on the radio. And so if nothing else, it's an incredible service to get those voices out there.
Well, thanks for that. Glad to have you listening in on that, Chris.
Absolutely. Let me jump to Judy and Sal. Judy's with the Heartland Labor Forum, which is in the Heartland. Judy, tell folks where exactly you are, and you've been around for a minute.
I guess I am one of the old timers. It's funny to feel that way, but we have been on the air since 1989, April Fool's Day. And, you know, the thing is, we're on community radio KKFI, 90.1 FM, Kansas City. And that's Kansas City, Missouri. But our signal, we have 100,000 watts of power at our station. And our signal reaches, to places like Topeka and St. Joseph, Missouri, and Boonville, Missouri. So it is the heartland for sure. And we think that labor radio absolutely belongs in community radio because we're part of the community. And so we have produced our show. It's a one-hour show. It's on Thursdays at 6 p.m. Central Time. We also podcast. So you can subscribe to the podcast by just going to whoever provides your podcasts. You can go to kkfi.org to listen to the show. Show's produced by volunteers from area unions. And it's got a pretty big variety of topics that we cover. We also reflect our local labor movement and our struggles that we have in the heartland, in the Kansas City area, for working people, not just labor unions, but all working people. So that's our show.
That's amazing. Yeah. Let me jump to Jeremy. Jeremy Wow is with the Break Time Breakdown. So tell folks where you are and a little bit about your show.
So I'm based out of Louisville, Kentucky, with the Sheet Metal Workers Local 110. And the idea behind the show was just a new way to interact with our membership and engage with the members. And we felt like this was kind of a no-brainer in that we can get them information and interact with them at their convenience. So they can pull up a podcast whenever they're available, whenever they have time, as opposed to forcing them to come to a meeting or mm-hmm. or something like that. And we're also using it as a tool to introduce our members to our members, because we cover such a large area that our guys and ladies on the western side of the state don't always interact with the people in like the southeastern part, so because it's so big. So it's just a way to kind of introduce our members to one another and, you know, have some fun little interviews and tell some fun stories.
I want to go to Liz Medina. She's with a podcast called En Masse. And one of my other podcasts that I do is Labor History Today. And Liz has gone way down that rabbit hole. she has really kind of put me to shame. But Liz, why don't you go ahead and tell folks where you're at and what your show is about.
I'm in Plainfield, Vermont, and I have been involved in the labor movement in Vermont since I moved here back in 2014. I got an AmeriCorps job here, and I wanted to really involve myself in the community. And I got involved with the Vermont Workers Center, and they have excellent political education where we really study our own state's political economy, and a lot of that involves studying the state's history. And the reason why that's important to the Vermont Workers Center and myself personally is that when you study history, you see these larger structural relations of power at play, and it kind of reveals the class analysis that sometimes gets left out of the labor movement. We either think about the interest of our own direct membership or a particular group at a time, and we need to do all these things at once. We need to juggle at all, but the class analysis sometimes gets a little bit left out. So what I really wanted to do was to create a show where we could engage with history that showed these patterns in these multi-dimensional ways, because stories, and I use oral histories as my historical inroad to all this. I use oral histories. And the reason being is that our stories, our life histories are very multidimensional and contain aspects of many different issues, such as racism, issues of class and poverty, unemployment, the industrial military complex, all that. You can, like, there are bits of it that touch each of our lives. So I just finished season one, which was in the community of Barre, Vermont, which is 10 minutes from me. And now I'm doing some kind of more looser bonus episodes while I research season two, which I hope will be focused on Wordstown.
It really is a fabulous sounding podcast. Really, really impressive. All right, Jacob Morrison. Jacob, you're with the Valley Labor Report.
Yeah, Valley Labor Report is a live radio show. We're in Alabama, and we're on a conservative talk radio station. We're actually on the station that Sean Hannity started on. And we chose that station to pitch a project to specifically because it's got a very wide reach here in North Alabama among workers in Alabama. A lot of folks here, they don't tune into CNN. They don't read Washington Post. They tune into WVNN and they get their news from the local shock jocks in the morning and in the afternoon, and then Rush Limbaugh during the middle of the day. So we wanted to be where they're tuned in for like minimal effort. They don't even have to change the dial, and we're already there on Saturday mornings. The show generally covers current events, and especially with an eye towards what's happening in the labor movement. We do try to focus on the labor movement and on unions, and not so much on the capital P political issues, because both of us being in unions in the rural South, there's a lot of wedge issues. And so one of the things that we want to do is to bring people together and to show them that a union is going to make your life better. And it's going to make the lives of your brothers and sisters on the job better. The best way to educate people politically is to have these real intimate conversations and interactions that being in a union demands of you. You have to talk about strikes and you have to talk about whether or not you can afford to go on strike, if you have enough money in your bank. Like, these are really intimate conversations, and it really humanizes people that maybe you have some perceived differences with. So that's kind of our mission, is to go on the conservative talk radio and show people that unions are good for you. And, you know, from the nature of the beast, obviously, you know, we do get into some politics, and that's always fun, because both of us are, we're pretty left wing. So that's always fun, poking the hornet's nest a little bit.
Well, thanks. All right, Harold, back to you. And you just launched on Saturday, right?
Yeah. When I first started getting involved with the Labor Radio Podcast Network, I was pitching the idea of doing a show up here in Washington State. And over the course of the past, what's it been, 5 months, I think, the show has been in development. And we finally launched on Saturday with... Mm-hmm. Working to Live in Southwest Washington. It's been quite the odyssey. And the motivation for the show really kind of echoes a lot of the stuff that Judy and Bama and Jeremy and Jacob have laid out already. We live in an era right now where everybody is so pressed with information, and there's so many emails and there's so many social media posts. So this venue was a good way to get information out so that we could have some of those intimate conversations like Jacob was talking about, mm-hmm. and like Jeremy did on his show about racial justice, in a way where it wasn't just another email from the Labor Council. The show is actually produced by the Southwest Washington Central Labor Council, and we have a pretty good communications infrastructure through email, through social media, but this gives us another way to talk to working people in Southwest Washington, and because it's on the internet, all over the world.
And that's the wonderful thing, and I think it's why so many folks have come to podcasts and to radio. I want to thank you all, members of the Radio Labor Podcast Network. Keep up the wonderful, wonderful work. And I can't wait to hear your next shows and look forward to working with you in the future. Thanks again so much, everybody. Have a great Labor Day. Talk to you soon.
Thanks for having us, everybody.
Thank you so much. This is great.
You better listen, my brother, 'cause if you do, you can hear their voices still calling from across the years. And they're crying across the ocean, they're crying across the land, and they will until we all come to understand. None of us are free. None of us are free. None of us are free. And one of us is chained. None of us are free. 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 And one of us is chained.
And welcome back to another edition of the IFF Podcast. Mark Treglio is sitting here today with Doug Stern. How you doing, Doug?
Well, Mark, looking forward to today's podcast. I think this is going to be a really interesting episode for a lot of our members.
Well, what I want to do is focus on one particular city for this episode. That's the city of Atlanta, long known as the pillar of the civil rights movement, also home to one of the best fire rescue departments in the country, and that's the Atlanta Fire Rescue Department.
And really, they were in the middle of a lot of the things that were going on in our nation over the last couple of weeks and months.
Joining us today, two members of the Atlanta Fire Rescue Department, members of Local 134 in Atlanta. That's Paul Gerdes, president of the Local 134 Atlanta Professional Firefighters. How are you today, Paul?
Mark, I'm doing good, sir. How are you doing today?
I'm doing excellent. Doing excellent. We also have with us today Andrew Anderson, Local 134 member, sergeant, and paramedic. How are you, Andrew?
I'm doing great. I'm glad to be with you guys. Nice to meet you.
Andrew, while I got you, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
I've been with the city of Atlanta as an employee since 2012. It's been a wonderful cascade of challenges and just personal growth since then.
Back to you, Paul. Tell us a little bit about yourself and where you're assigned.
I'm a paramedic lieutenant at Company 31 on C shift. That's on the that's in the southwest Atlanta. And we've got a ton of interstate, ton of residential buildings, not a whole lot of commercial, but it's a well-established firefighting company out in southwest Atlanta.
Now, Paul, for those who don't know much about Atlanta Fire Rescue, why don't you give us an overview of the department?
So, City of Atlanta is the capital of Georgia. We've got approximately about 800, 830 sworn members. We operate 32 engines, 16 ladder trucks. There is a private EMS company that does all of our EMS transport. We have our technical rescue. Squad 4 is located in the heart of the city, downtown. 6 battalion chiefs on duty downtown, one at the airport on a daily basis, 1 division chief. We've got approximately 580 members in the local 134.
So 3 months ago, the nation was shocked by the George Floyd killing. Everybody saw it. Everybody knows about it. I'm not going to get that much into it. But all across the country, there was pockets of unrest in the cities. And Atlanta experienced its own share. It was no different. You guys want to tell us a little bit about that? What you experienced and, you know, how you felt on the job during all of that?
That first weekend after George Floyd's death up in Minneapolis, we did see the nation shift towards that conversation and the focus on public safety. And as the community there in Minneapolis rallied, you know, against the treatment of George Floyd and the officers that day, it spun through the city of Atlanta as well through the rest of the nation. And, you know, here in Atlanta, there were peaceful protests that started to gather that first Friday night outside of the CNN Center. Atlanta's got several media outlets, one being CNN. And when the community wants to put protests together, it's a great place to do it because they know they're going to get some good coverage to talk about the issues that they want to address. And as that first night grew of protests, when the peaceful protesters had gone home after their message was documented, some of the violent protesters stayed. And the scene went from a peaceful protest to almost a violent situation almost instantaneously. From there, you had some pretty good footage that was seen throughout the nation of fire trucks getting rocks and bricks thrown at them. And that particular night, there was, I think, 3... maybe 4 apparatuses that were taken out of service with excessive damage. That first night, we didn't have any serious reported injuries. We did have one member said that he did get hit by a brick that had gone through the window, but that was just treated on scene and he finished his shift.
Andrew, what's going through your mind during all this?
Well, just being an Atlanta native, just being African-American, and just really understanding how the algorithm of social media works and, you know, just trying to be meticulous before you come to a conclusion from what you see on the media. That specific instance was very, along the lines of traumatic for me. It's, you know, it was really sad. I was very heartbroken. And I feel like a lot of people in the African-American community were heartbroken by it. And I think one of the most distant and just long-lasting impacts that you have from a situation like that that's recorded on video is that it gets spread so fast. There's a lot of legitimacy in the messages that we do get in the media and on social media, but there's also companies that profit off of people being triggered. So there's a problem, there's a solution, and then there's a way that we suggest and propagate how we fix these problems. So I personally feel as if, you know, protesting is a very good thing. It brings the attention of the people that make decisions. It brings the attention of other people who may not be aware. I just really want to understand what is the meaning and who benefits by delivering this message. You have to be prepared for how the narrative is delivered. As a public servant, you have to be ready for how this narrative impacts the people in your area. And that's just something that we really have to be cautious of, is the way the information is disseminated on social media. We're seeing a lot of people that are hurt based on their interpretation and understanding of what's happened. As an informal leader, as my station, I think it's really important to understand people. And it also helps you to understand people as a public servant. And that was just the catalyst of me trying to understand what's going on in the world and how we respond to it.
But I want to take this opportunity to thank Paul Gerdes, president of the Atlanta Professional Firefighters, Andrew Anderson, local 134 member, sergeant and paramedic for Atlanta Fire Rescue, for a great conversation today. Difficult topic, as always. We don't tread lightly on issues, but we want to take them head on. I appreciate you joining us today for tackling these difficult discussions, and wish you the best of luck moving forward, not just to the two of you, but to all the members of the Atlanta Fire Rescue Department and the local 134.
You guys sharing is what makes this podcast work for all of our members. So it's you guys that made this podcast work. So thank you.
Hello, working people of Southwest Washington.
And the world. Remember, this is going out over the whole internet.
Oh my goodness, Harold. I didn't realize. I mean, you're going to cut that, right? Dang it. Okay.
Yeah, that's gonna absolutely be taken out of the edit. I can guarantee you.
I'm sorry, Harold. Well, anyway, I'm Shannon Myers, and I'm president of the Southwest Washington Central Labor Council.
And I'm Harold Phillips, and I'm a SAG-AFTRA member who lives in Southwest Washington, specifically Vancouver. You know, the one here in the U.S., not the one up in Canada.
Although we do love our brothers and sisters up in Canada, eh?
Yeah.
Oh, come on, Harold. Anyway, we're very excited to announce that the Southwest Washington Central Labor Council is starting up a new podcast. And this podcast is made for you, the people who work and live and put food on the table in Vancouver, Longview, and all over Southwest Washington.
And the world, remember, internet.
Yes, all over the world. Don't remind me, Harold. But
hey, Shannon, what's it going to be called?
Working to Live in Southwest Washington.
Working to Live in Southwest Washington. You know, there's a saying up here in Vancouver, Washington.
Not the one in Canada.
No, not the one in Canada. The saying goes up here, we don't live to work, we work to live. And that's exactly what we're going to be talking about on this podcast. Yeah, we're going to talk about work, sure. But more importantly, we're going to talk about what it's like to live in this beautiful part of the world.
Because things are different here in Southwest Washington. I mean, we may be a part of the entire state of Washington, but our needs are definitely different than Seattle, than Yakima, than Spokane, and certainly different from that other state across the river, our neighbors in Oregon.
Not that we have anything against our brothers, sisters, and siblings down south of the river. A lot of people in Southwest Washington live here and cross the river to work, but that's not going to be the focus of this podcast. We're going to be talking about the kitchen table issues that affect working people right here in Southwest Washington. And the great thing is we're going to be able to talk to some of the newsmakers who have an effect on those kitchen table issues.
So not people in the other Washington, right, Harold?
Well, maybe we'll talk to people on the federal level once in a while. But remember, people who serve in state, county, and local government have a bigger impact on our daily lives here in this Washington. They're the ones who control things like employment law, sales tax.
And transportation issues, like the interstate bridge, that I-5 bridge. That's a big issue here in Southwest Washington, Harold.
We've just told you what we're thinking about doing on this podcast. But like Shannon said at the outset, this is a podcast for you. We want to know what's important to you, working people in Southwest Washington. So reach out to us. Send us an email at podcast@swaclc.org or find us on social media, SWWACLC on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, you name it.
We are really looking forward to hearing what you have to say and looking forward to having some great discussions with all of you.
Our first episode is scheduled to drop on September 5th. Hey, that's Labor Day weekend.
Well, of course, we are going to roll out our amazing Working to Live in Southwest Washington over Labor Day weekend, because what a perfect weekend to roll out the Working People's Podcast.
That gives you plenty of time to hit that subscribe button so you'll be the first to know when the first episode is posted. Did I say first enough? I think I did. Let me do it one more time. It's going to be first. First.
Don't forget to be first.
You'll be first for the first on the 5th.
So don't be shy. Hit that subscribe button and let's have some fun.
This is Radio Mime Troupe, and welcome to Tales of the Resistance, a summer of original political comedy radio plays by the confusingly named, always radical, and never ever silent San Francisco Mime Troupe. Join us for stories in four classic radio styles: adventure, detective noir, horror, and science fiction. Every 2 weeks, we will be presenting one episode written, directed, and performed by Mime Troupe veterans and dealing with the revolutionary issues of the day. And now, Jade for Hire.
It was after hours, and the offices of Jamazon were closed tighter than the eyes of a crooked government regulator looking over a corporation's books. But what was I doing? What was my plan? Why was I here?
Because you told me to drive you here?
Okay, Red, if you're going to help, there's something you need to know. Sometimes I'm going to say things out loud, but I'm not really talking to you.
How'll I know the difference?
When I'm talking to myself, it's normally in the past tense.
Like, Red the cabbie looked at me like I was crazy.
Yes.
Even if I'm currently looking at you like you're crazy.
Yes.
Gotcha.
I walked to the front door. Jamazon.com. Did you hear me say that?
No, I'm still looking at you like you're crazy.
Good. I walked to the front door. Jamazon.com. My ex-employer. Oh, you can get anything from Jamazon, except respect as a worker. They never seem to have that in stock. Maybe it was because the bosses gave it too many one-star reviews. Maybe the delivery costs were just too high. Red?
Still looking at you.
I want you to wait in the cab.
With a motor running?
No, that would be ecologically unsound. Just be ready.
Righto.
As Red went back to the cab, I looked through the glass doors. The offices were emptier than a libertarian soul. But there were lights coming from the back, near the loading dock. But just as I turned, who should I see but...
It's you!
It was the Jamazon worker I'd met when I came by earlier. The one whose name tag said, Greg.
What are you doing here?
I didn't tell you before, but I used to work here. I'm Derek.
Derek?
Derek.
Derek?
Derek.
Derek?
Yes, Derek! Derek Jade. And I was one of those guys fired from Jamazon for being a union organizer.
Don't say those words!
Why not? We're alone.
We're never alone.
We've been trying to get unions in these tech companies for years, but each time they find a reason to fire the organizers, saying we're unproductive, inefficient.
They are the bosses, and they look down on us like titans towering over ants. We can never beat them. We are just the ants and aphids and beetles and slugs and spiders and worms and roaches beneath their feet.
Is there another door around here I can try?
Wait!
What?
You're a software engineer.
I know.
I'm a software engineer.
I know.
Maybe we could work together.
Overthrowing the corporate aristocracy that endlessly enriches itself with the money it should pay the workers?
No, I was thinking we could start our own corporation.
That is exactly what I didn't say.
There are only two choices in this country, and I choose to be on top. I'm going to be the next Jobs, the next Gates, the next Zuckerberg. One day, everyone will know the name Greg Wittgenstein, and someday I will be so tall you and the workers and the unions won't be able to see my hat with a telescope.
You're not wearing a hat.
I know!
I walked away, wondering why so many workers dreamed of being like the bosses who despised them.
I can hear you!
I left Greg and made my way to the back of the building, slowly creeping behind a row of parked cars. Why were there so many cars here after hours? I could see the doors to the loading dock, and lights and voices were spilling out of the windows. I stepped forward to get a better look, but just then a meaty paw landed on my shoulder.
Can I help you?
Well, I could use a hand dismantling white supremacy.
What?
It was the Jamazon security guard I had tangled with earlier that afternoon.
Hey, weren't you here before?
As a matter of fact, I was.
Asking questions.
Sounds like me.
You're that smart aleck who thinks out loud.
Yes, yes he is.
Red, what are you doing?
Right now, he has a meeting to get to.
Hey, you can't go in there. It's only for employees.
Now is the time for us to get the respect we deserve.
Yeah!
The loading dock was full of employees from all over Jemazon, and they were enraptured as some organizer stirred them up like hot chocolate.
With whipped cream and sprinkles.
Red.
On a cold night.
We work for the richest man in the world. But when we ask for a little more, what do we hear? That he can't afford it. He makes $9 million an hour. $9 million. What do you make?
$18.72 an hour.
$18.72.
I make $13.77.
$13.77.
I don't get paid anything.
What?
I don't work here. I just came in for the donuts.
The donuts had been provided by visiting workers from a grocery store chain Jemazon had bought a few years ago. Food Holes. The workers there weren't treated any better than those at Jemazon, and both businesses had been declared essential, so everyone still had to work. Because even during a pandemic, Kevin and Karen America needed their organic avocados from Food Holes and their atmospheric sound generators from Jemazon. I guess nothing says America like cutting into a dark skin while surrounded by a little white noise.
We have to band together!
Yeah!
To demand representation!
Yeah!
And to demand respect!
Yeah!
Right now, your representative, Enrique Flores, is upstairs meeting with Chip Bonzo, the owner of Jamazon, negotiating the best deal he can get!
Yeah!
Wait a minute. Enrique Flores? I know him.
You do?
Sure, he's a pal. We trained to be organizers together. Didn't know he ended up at Jamazon.
Sounds like a right guy.
He is.
Flores is up there hammering out what's best for all of us. Engineers and drivers.
Yay!
He'll never knuckle under.
Order pickers and packers.
Yay!
And he will never let the workers down.
Stewards, foremen, managers, and owners!
Yeah. Yeah.
Wait, what?
Even the stockholders! All of us must unite!
The owners? The stockholders?
During these difficult times, everyone in the Jamazon family has to come together.
But what about the union?
What is a union, really? A bunch of people working together towards a common goal. And don't all of us at Jamazon... All of us, from the top down, want the same thing?
But the bosses don't...
Do we really need some outside agitator coming in here, telling us how to run our shop? Yes, a union is a wonderful thing, but aren't we already united? We're a family. Would you want some outsider coming into your home, dividing your family?
What?
Splitting the kids from their parents, taking them from the home they love, making them into orphans. And aren't unemployed workers just like orphaned children? Wandering the streets, cold, alone, no one to look to for comfort?
I don't want to be an orphan.
What about us getting paid nothing while the boss makes all that money?
Is that all family means to you?
No, but...
Money? I guess it's just like the bosses say. Some of the workers are just jealous of them. And jealousy, my friends, is a terrible thing.
Wait a minute! What does Flores say about all this?
Who are you?
A friend.
You don't work here?
I used to, but now...
So, you're an outsider?
Well, we did come from outside.
This is none of your business.
I just can't believe that
Enrique would... Agitator!
Yeah!
And you!
Me?
Put down those donuts!
All of them?
Yeah!
Aww.
Come on, Red. I get the feeling we're not wanted here. We started to leave, but then I noticed a half-open door leading to the front offices. So when no one was looking, I...
Shut up!
What?
If you're gonna do something, don't say it. Just do it.
This way.
The San Francisco Mime Troupe, and for the past 60 years, we have been doing political musical comedies for anybody who will listen. The Mime Troupe is a worker-run, multi-ethnic, multi-generational collective of activist artists committed to overthrowing capitalism one musical comedy at a time. And one of these days, we will get it right. You can support the troop by visiting our website, sfmt.org. Thank you to the San Francisco Arts Commission, SF Grants for the Arts, California Arts Council, USPPP, the Fleischacker Foundation, the Bernard Osher Foundation, the Zellerbach Family Foundation, the Don Stevens and Nicole Bellotti Laugh and Love Fund, this public radio station, and listeners like you. We'll see you next time for more Tales of the Resistance.
That's going to do it for this week's edition of Labor Radio Podcast Weekly. Just a small sample of the amazing programs aired recently on nearly 70 labor radio and podcast shows. They're all part of the Labor Radio Podcast Network of shows that focus on working people's issues and concerns. We've got links to all the network shows at laborradionetwork.org. And you can also find them by using the hashtag LaborRadioPod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. For Labor Radio Podcast Weekly, this is Chris Garlock, urging you to stay active and, of course, stay tuned to your local Labor Radio Podcast show. Labor Radio Podcast Weekly was edited by Evan Papp of the Empathy Media Lab, a production house, artist studio, and an event space here in Washington, D.C., with a focus on labor, political economy, art, and culture. Find out more at empathymedialab.com. This week's show was produced and mixed by me. Our social media guru is Harold Phillips. You can always reach us at laborradionetwork.org.